On everyone, let's jump right into the agenda. Welcome back. This is our January 2026 Game Fish and Parks Commission meeting. We're going down the agenda and we are to the Division of Wildlife Action Items number 15. And I believe Andrew Norton will be joining us virtually for the CWD action plan.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roebling. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
All right, great. So, Madam Chair, if you would mind, could we have Byron Buckley present agenda item 18 first, which will provide a little bit of background and context for the CWD action plan? That would be a informational item on chronic wasting disease and hemorrhagic disease.
Yes, absolutely. Whatever you need.
Thank you very much.
Description. I'm up to heaven.
Can y'all hear me now?
Yes, we can, and it looks like your presentation is also ready to go.
So Chris, can I swap over and then share mine? I've added another
Sure.
slide,
Yep, no
and
problem.
so I'd
Get out
like
quick.
to try to see if I can share my screen. Up there, share. And then let's see if this works. Okay. Can you see the presentation now?
Yep.
Okay. Let's see if I can get it into presenter mode. Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roblin. My name is Byron Buckley, Senior Wildlife Biologist of the Rapid City Office. Today I'm going to give a kind of a general information for hemorrhagics and chronic wasting disease. So I presented in the, I believe it was November commission meeting on hemorrhagic disease, as well as presented some information on the chronic wasting disease action plan. And we read through all the comments, just like the commission does, and we wanted to, we noticed that there was some misunderstandings or some miscommunication about what chronic wasting disease is, what hemorrhagic disease is, and what we as a department can actually do about these two diseases. And so this presentation is just kind of, I kind of wanted to clear some things up, go through what GFMP can actually do about these diseases and how these diseases can impact our whitetail and our cervid populations in general. So I don't want to spend too much time on this slide other than HD is for hemorrhagic disease, CWD is for chronic wasting disease. The general take home from this is hemorrhagic disease is more of the short-term population declines in certain localized areas, whereas chronic wasting disease is more of the long-term, larger scale population declines in certain areas as well. And so if at the end of the presentation we want to go into the kind of the nitty-gritty of what these are and the basic science behind it, I'm more than happy to go into that as well. But I wanted to kind of jump into what we as a department do for these diseases. So hemorrhagic disease, there are no commercially available vaccines for deer, for wildlife in general, and there are no feasible ways of treating this on the landscape. By using insecticide or pesticides to mitigate midges or the larvae that create the midges, that the midges come from. In the general herd, the population can recover over time. So in the more naive populations, there's going to be a lot more mortality, but they can survive this as well as have genetic immunities over time. So what we in GFMP do is we look at these mortalities over the midsummer to early winter, and then this gives us an idea as to the number of tags that we need to reduce in certain areas so we can allow these populations to grow. White-tailed deer, which are specifically hit hardest by hemorrhagic disease, have a very robust reproductive system when allowed to breed. And so being able to keep up with the mortalities, this is where some of the public can come in and tell us when they're seeing die-offs or when they're seeing dead deer in these areas. So we have a better gauge at how many tags we need to reduce in these areas so we can actually maintain or increase our deer numbers in these areas. So I said it's kind of feasibly, it's very difficult to treat these areas in across the state. The feasibility is very difficult. So I wanted to point out the kind of a localized area that we had this year around Aberdeen. So the light blue areas are open water sources. So these are areas where the midges can actually breed and or lay their eggs. And this is where more of the insects are going to be found. This doesn't even include the riverine systems or the creeks or the ephemeral pools that can host these biting midges. So just in general, the feasibility and or the economic impact, the economic cost of potentially treating all of these areas would be extremely difficult. And not to mention the different trophic levels that might be impacted with a pesticide or an insecticide. So this is the prairie pothole region. So other game species use these water sources as breeding areas. So waterfowl use these, and removing insects on a large scale could negatively impact reproductive potential for waterfowl as well. So jumping into chronic wasting disease, this disease is much slower acting than hemorrhagic disease. It spreads very slowly across the landscape, but it is very methodical across the landscape. So GFMP recommends the reduction of artificial feeding, which can concentrate deer in certain areas and then contribute to the spread of chronic wasting disease. Also, minimizing movement of deer and or deer carcasses or proper disposal of deer carcasses can help in reducing the spread of CWD. There are no vaccines or environmental remediation, meaning once CWD is in an area, it is almost impossible to get rid of without extreme methods. And again, it gets into that more of the economical stuff as well. So monitoring the herds is something that GFMP, we take very seriously, and then conducting relevant research. So the picture on the screen there is one of our cow elk in the Black Hills. We are looking at survival rates in the Black Hills for cow elk in relation to chronic wasting disease. So chronic wasting disease is shown to be a negative impact for survival as well as reproductive potential. And we also would like to work with the general public to maintain and engage the public with this information to make sure that they understand what we're doing and what we're trying to do with our action plan. So the big thing for me is the impacts on the herd. I am a population ecologist, so that's where the rubber meets the road with me. Hemorrhagic disease, which is mainly a whitetail disease. Other individuals can contract this and can perish from this, but at large, white-tailed deer are the ones that are hit the hardest. This is generally a localized event. These localized events can be up to the county and in smaller region areas of the state. So these local areas, they see the die-off. But again, due to the reproductive potential of white-tailed deer, reducing tags can help the herds recover in time and as they develop their own immunities to this disease. Contrasting that with chronic wasting disease, which is a cervid disease, so white-tailed mule deer and elk can all be negatively impacted by this disease. The impacts of this disease are much more widespread. Some states have it across their entire state. And we have CWD in spots right now in the state. There is no herd immunity over time. So every individual that has contracted this disease has perished. So it can't move those immunities into the next generation. Herds are definitely impacted by chronic wasting disease, so it can suppress survival and the reproductive potential for herds. So I wanted to put these maps in here for both hemorrhagic disease and chronic wasting disease. So this is hemorrhagic disease. This is the Great Plains research that has been, these are reported hemorrhagic disease across time. So reaching back all the way to 1982, going all the way to 2020. And you can see starting at around 2012, there have been substantially more hemorrhagic reports seen in South Dakota. So this particular research has suggested that because climate is warming in this area, as well as more droughts, as well as fewer winter events, fewer severe winter events, we're seeing a lot more impact from hemorrhagic disease. So this is a heat map created from 23 to 2025 of both epizootic hemorrhagic disease and blue tongue. So you can see that the southeastern portion of South Dakota has been hit much harder than the rest of the state. In this area, we have gone down to no doe tags, so buck only tags, to allow the reproductive potential for whitetail to kind of take hold in these areas. And also in the Black Hills, we've also gone to a buck only tag as well. So I put this map in here to give you an idea is that we're not the only ones in this fight against EHD. So in the Midwest, we're seeing a lot more spikes in hemorrhagic disease because our deer are more immune naive to this virus. So along that northern portion, we're seeing a lot more deaths. We're seeing a lot more reports because our deer immunity system is not accustomed to hemorrhagic disease in general. So if you look down at the southeastern U.S. where the virus is more endemic, you don't see as much in reports. So we are actually on the front line of where the disease is kind of moving into newer territory. So for the CWD example, my best example is in Saskatchewan. In 2000, it was reported in wild cervids in this area, and the prevalence rate has exponentially increased. So it's almost 90% in male mule deer, 60% in female mule deer, and in around 40% for male whitetail and about 10% for female whitetail. So in this area, there's about a 40% survival rate for females. This is about half the survival rate for those individuals without CWD. So these areas are definitely being impacted by CWD, and the reproductive potential for those individuals in this area have been substantially decreased. But it's important to note that the deer populations there and the deer densities there are different than our deer densities in South Dakota. But we can use this as kind of a gauge. If we get to higher prevalence in South Dakota, we could see a population decline. So just as a summary, hemorrhagic disease is more of the short-term mortality events, short-term die-offs within about 3 to 5 years. Given genetic immunity and reducing tags, we can see the population recover. This disease is more of a kind of in your face because you see a lot of dead deer around water sources. And so this is more on everybody's mind of this is a really big impact for our deer populations, which is why we at GFMP can go through and reduce these tags to help boost our population in these areas, or to help maintain our population in these areas. Hemorrhagic disease is becoming more common in the Midwest, and we are taking that into account in some of our management as well. CWD, on the other hand, is more of the long term. So there are herds generally do not recover. This does suppress survival and suppress reproductive potential. Once it is present, it doesn't leave. So it will only increase once it's in an area. So it's been in Colorado since 1967, and it has only spread since then. So following GFMP carcass disposal and transportation recommendations can help prevent the spread of this disease. And also not congregating cervids by using artificial feeding sources. So this is a very, this is a big source for where animal to animal transmission can actually take place. So CWD has been in states much longer than it has in South Dakota, but these are something that we can look to as potential future effects if the spread continues. So the public can help in this fight against these two diseases. So reporting dead and sick deer to GFMP staff, following the recommendations of transportation and disposal, and not feeding wildlife artificially, and have your deer tested if you so desire. And we mirror these frustration with these diseases, but it's important to understand that we are talking amongst other states, other federal agencies, amongst ourselves to try to find out what is the best for the deer resource, as well as what's best for the South Dakota resources that we're managing for, to make sure that we actually have a sustainable population which future generations can actually hunt. So with that, I will take any questions.
Thank you for that. Any questions from the commission and or comments? Commissioner Beast.
Commissioner Beast, so if you're saying that a lot of this is spread through close deer contact and feeding that, so why ain't the big deer states that feed like Texas ain't experiencing this?
Through the chair?
Yes, please.
So they are experiencing the effects of CWD. There's a lot of information down there. They don't have the deer densities that some of the big feeders are. So like, I know that in Mississippi, there's a lot of information that shows that they're taking certain areas that have confirmed CWD and moving to a no feeding ban on these areas. And so some of those states are definitely following this trajectory. But in Texas, I don't really know the ins and outs of it. I haven't lived there in it's been almost 10 years since I've lived in Texas. So I'm trying to keep up with what they're doing as opposed to what we're doing up here in the north, it's kind of difficult.
So one other thing, when you watch some of these outdoor shows anymore, they're advertising these contained water sources hunters are putting out now. Can that lead to more disease? Will the midges go into those and populate more and get to the deer that way, other than just through the natural water?
Through the chair.
Yes.
Commissioner Beast, that is a good point. And so there is some research that suggests that if you spread out the water sources and make sure that one of those water sources is what they're going to call clean, then the midges won't really be in that water source. But I don't know at what scale you would have to do that at. Generally speaking, I know in Florida they tried midge reduction by spraying insecticide and larvicide on there. So when they did that, they reduced the number of midges and larvae, but they were also basically backfilled in by other water sources and other sources that hold the adult midges. So they basically cleaned a little bit up, but it was repopulated almost instantly.
Additional questions? Any other questions from the commission and or comments? We appreciate the information and the clarification for the public, so thank you, Byron.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll turn it back over to Andrew for item 15, as this will be one of the action items.
All right. Good afternoon again, Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roebling. I'm Andrew Norton, Wildlife Program Administrator. So Byron did a great job of a lot of the legwork here. He had presented the plan in November. It went out for 2 months of public comment. We only received about 15 public comments, but he addressed a lot of those comments. They were pretty mixed with individuals wanting us to do more in regards to CWD management and monitoring, and individuals wanting us to do less. Just one thing I think is important to clear up with CWD and what's going on nationally is I'm a member of a MAFWA, which is Midwestern States, so WAFWA Western States, as well as more national disease working groups, and all of those working groups, there's definitely it's almost like a new movement to really focus on trying to, I don't want to say shoot our way out of this issue, but that's kind of what I think is implied. And for folks less aware of the inability to do that, they might think that that's something we want to do in South Dakota. And that couldn't be furthest from the truth. We have literally states, most of our Western neighbors, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Missouri, the list goes on and on of states that have really aggressive hunting seasons to attempt to reduce deer densities with the hope that they're going to mitigate CWD impacts. I think the research on that is questionable at best, and I personally wouldn't prescribe any of the benefits that are suggested by doing that. So I just wanted, hopefully folks aren't thinking that we're of the opinion that we want to try to shoot our way out of this disease. Does that Byron put it very well? We have CWD. We definitively are not getting rid of it. It's here to stay. We've had it for a quarter century, probably a lot longer than that. We know it's going to increase. We know it's going to spread. We know as it increases and as it spreads, it kills more deer. The bad news with that means our harvestable surplus goes down. If maybe in 20 years, where now we could harvest 5% of the does and have a stable population, maybe in 20 years we can only harvest 2. That's a big unknown. Byron presented the Alberta research, Saskatchewan research. That's an extreme. I really hope we never get to 90% prevalence. That would be problematic. I hope we hover around low prevalence rates, and we don't really see a huge population level impact. But unfortunately, that's just a simple fact of the disease. And one of the objectives outlined in the plan is to have an informed public. And I think it's really critical that we hammer home those points that we have it. It's not going away. it's going to increase. It's going to spread. There's very few things we can do about it. But the things that we do are carcass transport and disposal regulations that Byron mentioned. We want to engage our public to see what their thoughts are on artificially concentrating deer. And one thing we don't talk about enough with deer is good habitat. Good habitat, both hemorrhagic disease and CWD, is going to be a huge benefit. If you're driving home from the commission meeting, going west across South Dakota or east across South Dakota, you go west, look in those historical drainages, you might see a few dead cottonwoods or a few trees there. Historically, there was a lot more trees on the landscape, a lot better deer habitat. You go east, think about all the homesteads that have been pulled out, and there's corn and soybeans there now. When I grew up in southwest Minnesota in the 90s and early 2000s, we were unfortunately literally responsible for pulling out fence lines, cutting down trees and shelter belts and homesteads to create more corn. We all know that that's going on, but what that means is a lot less deer habitat. And again, if we can get good habitat on the ground, we're going to have more robust deer populations. Byron talked to the reproductive capacity of deer. We don't have that we had 30 years ago, especially in southeastern South Dakota. So that was my shameless plug for a focus on good deer habitat can really help us get out of both of these diseases, or at least mitigate their effects. And I think that's, I hope nobody would disagree that we want good habitat in the state, and that's an objective of our agency.
We do have a question real quick. Commissioner Cole, who's with us virtually, does have a question.
Yep. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Yes. Can. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, for either Andrew or Byron, I don't care which one, I've got two questions. The first one is, when we were talking about the EHD, I heard reference to, you know, warming. And I'm a little bit confused, and I think you can explain it. Why is there no EHD in Florida? In some of the warmer states, that's number one. The second one is dealing with CWD, chronic wasting, and just simply, is it irrefutably scientific that the CWD is spread from deer to deer contact?
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner Collin, through the chair.
Yes, please.
And Byron, please chime in if I miss some of this. But Byron touched on both of those, and probably myself, I tried to touch on the second question, probably didn't do a great job. For the example of the Southeast, why we don't see hemorrhagic disease, Byron used that word endemic, because deer build up this immunity over time, and that Mitch is there more regularly. So they in a maybe can't speak to Florida specifically, but a lot of the southeastern states, they do have hemorrhagic disease. It persists in the population, but they've built up this herd immunity, if you will, where either animals have been exposed to it or they're genetically less susceptible to it through time and it affects them less. What he means by it kind of this moving north, I'm not a genius. I don't know what the mechanism is for it moving north, but obviously, in the Southeast, historically, it's been warmer, and we're seeing hemorrhagic disease move north. And what it does is it affects these, Byron used the word naive populations that haven't been exposed to this midge. So they're now exposed to the midge. They haven't built up that herd immunity over decades, and it really hammers them. I mean, what we saw in Aberdeen is probably not good. We hardly ever see hemorrhagic disease that far north. And then to your second question, yes, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's irrefutable that there's deer-to-deer increases transmission rates, or that there's direct deer-to-deer contact causes transmission. I would even go out on a limb and say environmental contamination causes transmission. People always point back to a study, and I believe it's Wyoming, where they depopulated a deer pen. That was CWD positive. They put deer back in there, and those deer contracted CWD from the environment. That's the only known case I know from environmental transmission, but yes, I'd say irrefutable is, I wouldn't bet my life on it, but I would be pretty confident that deer-to-deer transmission is definitely happening.
Commissioner Call, any other questions? You're good to go? All right. Thank you for that. And I apologize for interrupting you, Andrew. If you want to continue on, please.
No, I think I covered everything. I just wanted to reiterate, we really only have three objectives in that plan, and that is to inform the public. That's what we're moving forward with, trying to engage the public with getting their thoughts on whether they have any interest in doing anything about feeding or baiting, promote best management practices, and then work with other government agencies to best monitor and manage this disease. And I'd say that because, again, some of the comments were, you're spending too many resources on this disease, and relative to other states, I'd say we're on the way low end of the spectrum of how many resources we dedicate to addressing this. And mainly it's because, unfortunately, there's not much we can do with CWD. So with that, there were no changes to that draft plan. And if the commission is supportive of it, we would ask them to move forward and adopt that CWD action plan.
Thank you, Andrew. Commissioner Locken, did you have a question?
Yes, Andrew. Refresh my memory on saltbox. Where do they stand as far as in comparison to feeding deer?
Through the chair,
Yes.
I'll take a stab at this and can probably have some law enforcement officers or someone correct me, but I think normal agricultural practices are fine. So those obviously would concentrate deer, but you can't use, for example, if it's not a normal agricultural practice to concentrate deer. So a more obvious example would be a pile of corn. Like obviously farmers have piles of corn out there when they're feeding livestock or in their feedlot. That wouldn't be artificially concentrating them. But if someone would be literally hunting over a pile of corn, that would not be legal. Off the top of my head, I can't recite the exact statute and administrative rule on how that's described. So someone call a friend, help me if I butchered that.
Mr. Locken, any follow-ups?
Well, I was wondering more on chronic wasting. Does the prion survive being on a salt block? That was really my question.
Yes, through the chair, that's a great question. And actually, if Byron had another 20 minutes, he could have talked more about the research that we're doing. That prion persists in the soil. That's that part of that environmental contamination I talked about. So whether it be at a salt block, we'll see it in the soil. If it's a natural mineral site, we'll see it in the soil. And Byron and other staff have collected hundreds of samples in the Black Hills, and they're testing soil for chronic wasting disease. And you do find it in a lot of places, scrapes. There's research showing that those prions are uptaken by vegetation. So again, genie out of the bottle, I think that gets back to the point of once we have it, it's not going away. It's even if God forbid we didn't have any more deer or elk in the state, we would still have those prions in the soil in numerous counties.
Any other comments, questions from the commission? We do need to take action on this item, so we do need a motion and a second. Moved by Commissioner Beast.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Bartling. Any comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It will move forward. Thank you. It is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. And then we'll move on to 16.